Welcome to Asimov's Spotlight. Here now, another story selected from the pages of Asimov's science fiction magazine. Hi, this is James Patrick Kelly, and I'm here to introduce this month's Asimov Spotlight author, Derek Kunskin. Derek is a writer living in Gatineau, Quebec. His fiction has sold to On Spec, Blackgate, Subterrane, and Esli. Although he trained as a molecular biologist, he left science to work with street children in Latin America and eventually found a career in refugee issues. When not writing, he is invariably to be found with his 6-year-old son, playing with action figures, building forts, and reading comic books. To Live and Die in Gibbon Town is his second story for Asimov's. It's a social satire about murderous monkeys and apes who tenuously coexist in an outrageous post-human world. So check over your shoulder. You never know when or where an assassin might be lurking. As you listen to Derek Kunskin's To Live and Die in Gibbon Town.
Murray slips the cool steel of the silencer into my palm. My hearing, augmented with somatic genetic modifications from bats, picks up the scrape of machined metal against thickened skin. I screw the silencer onto the muzzle, using my palm to muffle the rasp. I'm Reggie, and I'm a businessman. Murray gives me the scope. I do a quick sighting and then slide it onto the rifle. I'm really good at what I do. Murray passes me a clip of ceramic 7.62 rounds. I don't care how thick your force field is, it ain't stopping these puppies. What I do isn't exactly tea conversation. I kill old people. The older, richer, and droolier the better. Me and Murray have swung high into a tree in the park overlooking the official residence of the Bonobo Embassy. Through the scope, I see my target, an ancient bonobo female, lanky, tangled hair hanging in patches around cheeks and chin, gray tits sagging flat and wrinkly like broken balloons. The stained white padding around her waist doesn't seem to be doing its job of holding in what needs holding, and flies buzz. She wheezes, staring out of the compound, searching the trees, looking for danger. Sorry, old hag, but I've got you this time. I don't care whose mother you are. I'm the angel of death, and I bring... Something loud snaps behind me. Murray and all my equipment knock against my back. I hold onto the branch and I don't make a sound, but dumbass Butterfingers Murray drops my GPS and a set of small screwdrivers. They tinkle down, hitting every goddamn branch. His furry orange face stares at me, lips forming a big O. Alexandra the bonobo, the ambassador's mother, jolts from her seat and stands straight. Her diaper gives out at the same time and plops between her feet with a hypnotically sickening splash. The old hag points at me. You're a failure, you no-ask macaque afterbirth, she shrieks. You couldn't kill a blind, one-armed, no-legged spider monkey. Go back to eating fruit, you mouth-breathing loser. That's a bit harsh. I like fruit. She follows it with a stream of racist epithets and froths at the mouth by the time she gets to, the only thing I hate worse than macaques are gibbons. Racist bitch, I hate bonobos. I'd love to yell back, but embassy security pours into the yard. They're carrying pistols with metal rounds. Won't get through their own force field, but I don't want to be here when their marksmen come out, or the gibbon police get here. My visa status is dodgy enough as it is. Dumbass, I yell. I smack Murray. I regret it immediately. I hit him hard enough to hurt myself on the carbon nanotube reinforced skin under his brown fur. I did the job myself and did it pretty good. Flexible enough to keep his skin looking real, but still hard enough to be goddamn near bulletproof. Problem is, my sidekick is clumsy and follows instructions like a Guatemalan pack burro. My hand still stings, and security guys are pulling their binoculars. Alexander the Bonobo fills the air with obscenities that would make a hooker blush. Murray, you dumb chimp! What kind of an operation are we running here? What happened to professionals, huh? What do I pay you for? I stab a finger downwards. Carry the damn equipment down and pick up my tools! Murray scrambles down the tree with a harried look. I scamper down the other side, where Embassy security won't get a good look at me. At the bottom of the tree, we're shielded from view. Murray is fumbling my screwdrivers out of the grass of the park like he's preening the lawn. Sirens whine in the distance. All right, come on, forget the screwdrivers, get in the car! We hightail it, no pun intended, to my Renault Quattrelle, the finest car produced in its price range, in France, Colombia, and Slovenia in the early 70s. As far as I know, there are no other cars in this price range. I won it in a drunken contest of strength from a big, ham-handed gorilla who got deported a few weeks ago. Those two events are entirely unrelated, by the way. He was pissed when he found out about my myofibril augments, but like they say, you shouldn't hustle people strange to you. The little red box of a car leans heavily to the passenger side as Murray gets in. I'm too light to balance it when I get behind the wheel. I'd love to squeal the tires to make our getaway, but I'm still learning the clutch, and it doesn't have nearly as many horses under the hood as, well, anything. Still, I get it up to 35. We're on the main road and into thick traffic long before flashing lights come into view. Damn it, Murray! Do you know how much money you just blew us? Sorry, boss, he says. Murray's got a strong, slow accent from the chimpanzee townships to the south. This business is all about reputation. Do you think anyone is going to hire me, hire us, if we can't grease an old bonobo in a diaper? Sorry, boss. And Murray, I can't stress this enough. If I'd have killed her, I wouldn't have had to have seen her diaper fall down. I won't do it again, boss. Last week was so much more promising. Gibbons and bonobos are pretty stuck up about jobs having to do with death. They don't do them. It's beneath them. You can't pay most gibbons love or money to euthanize the decaying elderly. I was running out of time on my visa pretty fast and staring at deportation to macaque territory if I didn't find a scam soon. That's when I fell into the euthanasia business. I acquired a failing company from a low-status gibbon with a gambling problem. How hard can euthanasia be? Clients want to die, right? That business deal got me an extension on my visa. All I had to do was turn a profit, and I could do that any time I wanted, just so long as it was within 90 days. Problem was, the bigger whack shops, made up mostly of hulking gorillas, had cornered the euthanasia market. Also, I knew nothing about needles, dosages, or the sterile technique. That's when I got my great idea. Imagine this ad on late-night TV. Is your time up? Die with excitement and adventure. Struggle to the very end. Hire an international assassin to finish the job that nature started. If you see it coming, you get your money back. It doesn't matter that I'm not really an assassin. Most business is image and branding, right? I'm exotic. I'm international. That's why Gibbon Immigration wants to deport me back to my shithole country where military coups come more often than Christmas. Gibbon Country has great euthanasia laws. They don't specify how it has to be done, and their weapon laws favor the rugged individualist in each of us. There are plenty of places in this town I wouldn't want to walk without a high-powered rifle and a bulletproof chimpanzee. So International Hit Squad was born. I even got 6 column inches on page 12 of the Gibbontown Shopper, the third most read free paper in the capital, right under the story about the debate on zoning changes. You can't pay for that kind of publicity. Clients were slower to react than the press corps. It took 2 weeks for the first one. Unfortunately, it was Alexandra, the harpy they used to scare little bonobo children at night. A bodyguard wheeled the saggy bitch into my office. I'd put on my best business face. "Fucking macaque," she said when she saw me. Then she spit on my floor. I shit you not, she spit on my floor. Who spits on a floor? "How can I help you, ma'am?" I held a clipboard to give myself an air of efficiency. "Your operation is bullshit," she yelled. She yelled everything. Her bodyguard, a biggish bonobo with a heavy pistol on his hip, rolled his eyes. "I beg your pardon, ma'am?" I asked. "I read your ad," she said. "This is a big scam. You can't deliver shit in a pot, much less give me an exciting death." "You'll never know when I strike, ma'am. You'll never see me coming." I smiled my confidence-inspiring businessman smile. The bitch spit on my floor again. I was a sergeant in the Bonobo Marine, she said. I worked close protection for the Bonobo Secret Service and kept a senator alive during the Gibbon invasion. No one can sneak up on me, least of all a goddamn poser of a macaque. I shrugged. My guarantee is there, ma'am. If you see me coming, you get your money back. It's a scam. Try me out, I said. Unless you're yellow. She slapped a wrinkly hand on the armrest of her wheelchair. She looked like she was having an aneurysm, foaming and sputtering. I didn't want her to die. She hadn't signed the contract yet. Bring it on, little man. My eyes narrowed and I felt my augmented muscles debating whether to choke the bitch right here. Sure, there are lots of smaller primates and macaques aren't very big, but everyone, and I mean everyone, knows we hate being called little. Racist bitch. Macaques just have delicate bones. I snapped a contract onto the clipboard and shoved it at her. You'll never see me coming, ma'am. Whatever you think you knew way back when has been made obsolete, just like you. Little veins on her neck thumped under papery dark skin. White spittle collected at the points of her mouth. She scrawled her name across the bottom of the sheet and threw it back at me. It's on, she yelled. Not yet, I yelled over her. She'd signed in the wrong spot. I'm a businessman. I'm a stickler for detail. I handed her a fresh contract and put an X where she had to sign. Do it right this time. Her long, old fingers flexed and released like she wanted to slap me. Then she filled out the whole form. Then she signed in neat little letters and handed it back to me. I looked at it. Oh, shit. Listed next of kin was the Bonobo ambassador. Address, the ambassador's residence. That place was crawling with security. She cackled when she saw my expression change. And I've got augments, little man, she said, pointing at her eyes. I can see farther than a hawk, and I've got nothing to do all day but watch for you. She cackled louder and signaled for her bodyguard to wheel her out. Damn. After being chased out of a tree on my first attempt to off the hag, I hire a gibbon to do some surveillance work. She's an aging street vendor with long arms and pale, thick fur. She trundles a soup cart around, and with my encouragement, sets herself up close to the Bonobo ambassador's official residence. The Bonobos don't go near her, but the gibbon diplomatic police, tall, black-eyed, with white belts and holsters, take their cigarette breaks beside her cart, nursing cups of soup, and sometimes something harder. Good girl. At the end of the third day, she tells me that one of the diplomatic cops said that the ambassador's mother is going shopping on Saturday at the crafts market. Sweet. The crafts market has lots of cover and is crawling with gibbons and foreigners. Murray and I can blend in. Early on Saturday, Murray, loaded with my gear, follows me in. It rained yesterday and the market stinks of wet fur and fine mud overlaying older paving stones. The stalls, framed in wood, are covered by woven tarps of so many colors that it looks like a rainbow barfed on the whole sprawling hippie fest. The stalls creak under the worthless weight of woven grass baskets, wooden masks, carved salad spoons, and hemp blankets. Nothing here couldn't have been made better and cheaper by a good, solid greenhouse gas-producing machine. The market had congealed a long time ago around an old cathedral tower. The rest of the cathedral had burnt down or been knocked down or something, but the old tower is still there. I bribe some janitorial type and he lets us in. We wind our way up the damp, rotting stairwell and I set myself up on the fourth floor, where the absent old bell has left space for a marksman with a rifle to cover most of the place. I leave my dumbass sidekick on the landing and he's only too happy not to be involved. Don't get me wrong. Murray's good at some stuff. I just haven't found what it is yet. He's loyal, though, like a stupid dog. If he hadn't married my sister, I would have booted his ass a long time ago. I can see the parking lot, and it doesn't take me long before I see a dark Ford Bronco with tinted windows and diplomatic plates driving in. I watch through the scope. I recognize Alexander's Bonobo bodyguard by the balding head and the long vertical wrinkles around his lips. He and the driver help the witch out and put her into the wheelchair. She looks positively delighted today. Although, to be honest, the Bonobo bitch could have gasped for all I can figure out of their expressions sometimes. Still, there's something. Good day to die, you old hag. I have a clear shot at any of a dozen positions once she's in the market. I aim my scope down the rows of stalls, looking for where the most surprising shot could happen. Should I shoot her in the head as she's looking at something, or in the chest as she's paying? I want her to know it was me. She paid for surprise. Still, a paycheck is pretty important. This one will put me in the clear for a while, and will sort out my immigration problems. Lots of customers, even early in the morning. Lots of old Gibbon ladies, but more of the button-down crowd than I expected. Slumming? Faux new agers? I scan a few through the scope. They're big Gibbons, mostly males, picking at the merchandise. They've got smocks on, the latest Gibbon fashion. These guys all have one hand in their pockets. Cops? Doesn't matter, I'm not doing anything illegal. I've got a license for the rifle. No receipt, but a license. And I've got a contract signed by Miss Bitchy herself to kill her. I'm golden. One of the Gibbons looks familiar. Long black hair, pronounced eye ridges, wrinkled face hanging off the nose ridge, black skin and pinkish lips. Over his forehead is a receding V of baldness. Why does he look familiar? Fuck. I've seen him before. He's an immigration supervisor. Scanning the market. Now that I look closer, I recognize a few others. All immigration officers. Not mine, but pretty much everyone else. Shit. They're holding passport readers in their pockets and walking through the crowd. The chips in the Gibbon ID cards, as well as the smart passports and RFID visas of foreigners, are all automatically checked. I pat my chest pocket. Passport and visa are there. Good. They'll stand a cursory check, but if I get too close, not so much. My visa troubles, as I said, are mostly solved. I didn't say they were solved legitimately. The business visa in my passport isn't exactly mine, let's leave it at that. But what the hell is immigration doing here? Lots of foreigners here for sure, but doesn't immigration have bigger fish to fry? I huddle close to the corner, only the end of my black scope showing above the sill. I scan. I spot the bodyguard pushing the wheelchair of my diapered bonobo target. Her flabby, drooling mouth is spread into a wide grin. That bitch! She set me up! She tipped off immigration! I can probably make it out of here without running into them, but she's daring me to put a round between her smug black eyes and draw attention to myself. The cops will swarm the place. Then I'll show my euthanasia license. Of course, seeing as how I'm a macaque, immigration will want to have a look at me. A close look. God, I hate old people. I kick the wall, startling Murray. He sticks out his bearded bottom lip and his pink ears look even more awkward sticking out of the sides of his head. We're heading downstairs, Murray, I whisper. This place is crawling with immigration. His big eyebrows rise in alarm. I sorted out his immigration problems, kind of the same way I sorted out mine, but I didn't spend as much money on it. There aren't a lot of immigration officers who will believe that Murray is a visiting professor of physics. Don't get me wrong, some Gibbons are absolutely stupid. I just don't want to bank an operation on Mr. Tenure Track here. Come on, I say, and lead the way downstairs and out the door. Murray follows, lugging my gear. I swing him to the left and spot one of the button-down types at the other corner of the tower. He's scanning the crowd, looking away right now. I pull Murray to the right, almost setting our fur on fire on an open charcoal grill. An old Gibbon lady is making tortillas. Murray squeals. We weave around her. Lots of people around, but I'm starting to think maybe we stand out a little. Two foreigners carrying non-hippie gear? Yeah, which one of these things doesn't belong in a handicrafts bazaar? I grab us two Andean-style ponchos at a stall decorated with old framed lithographs of dragons, rainbows, and unicorns. Murray admires them. I shove the poncho over his head. Watch unicorns on someone else's dime. I pay the Gibbon weaver more than I want to for the ponchos, but we look a lot less conspicuous now. An immigration guy is sort of standing nonchalantly at the other end of this alley. I pull Murray with me between two stalls, shoving past some Gibbons smoking on stools while they weave dream catchers. "Go back where you came from," one of them yells after us. I lick my finger and flip him the bird. We find a narrow alley, under trafficked, with lots of puddles. The stalls here are filled with specialty stuff. If you want rings of South German metwurst or dried Baltic cod with wrinkled eyes, I can now point you here. This alley crosses a couple of the busier ones, but immigration seems to be staking out the bigger intersections. Still, I don't let myself react until we're in the Renault, on the road, and in second gear. That dirty bonobo bitch. Two can play with corrupt officials. Now it's really on. It's got to be. I'm down to 62 days. I meet my immigration officer in a small cafe far from her office. Her name's Cao Yai. She's descended from the Thai gibbon populations. After one of the many Thai coups, lots of Thai gibbons moved to these parts. Their exotic gray-white fur and black bellies made them in demand for TV commercials and even acting roles, but if you ask me, that fad wasn't over fast enough. None of them could act worth shit, and we're talking soaps here, and their accents were pretty thick. Cao Yai was born here and speaks like a native. She leveraged her looks to get a job in the Gibbon Immigration Service. What I like best about her is her pragmatism. I slide a thickish wad of bills across the table. Low denominations, but it's not like I'm asking her to get the ambassador's mother deported. I just want the immigration computer system to mark Alexandra's diplomatic visa as expired. A diplomatic visa would normally be dealt with on paper by some low-level bureaucrat in the Gibbon Protocol Office, but the Gibbons and Bonobos have been at each other's throats in three separate wars in the last 20 years. You can bet that the Gibbons won't make anything easy for the Bonobo diplomats. Here's how I figure it'll go down. The old hag has to drive from the official residence to the immigration office. On the way, I put a bullet through the car window and her head. My client is satisfied with a surprising euthanasia experience. I get my pay minus the cost of one car window. I'm a genius. Cao Yai calls me from her office the next day. She's never called me from her office. The date of expiry got changed, she said. I couldn't access the system with my clearance. I needed to get my supervisor's help. I'll need more money. Of course she will. Fine, I say. We can work something out. Maybe not now, but when I'm a little more flush. When is she coming to your office? That's the thing, Reggie. Protocol Office and Foreign Affairs are tangling their fur over this. They're probably going to send an officer to her. Damn it! They asked me a lot of questions about you. What? I ask, feeling my stomach cool. Who did? Foreign Affairs and my boss. Shit, what does that mean? Relax, I didn't tell them anything about your funny status. As far as they're concerned, you're a legit businessman. I am a legit businessman. I have a contract. That's what I told them. They're looking to help out. Apparently, they need to make some sort of gesture of peacemaking to the bonobos. The big bosses at Foreign Affairs are trying to play nice. What does this all mean? Can you fax me over your contract, she asks. They want proof that you're legitimately authorized to euthanize the old bonobo. Then what? How would you like to get into the official residence as part of the protocol team going in? Everyone knows I'm a macaque, right? I don't look anything like a gibbon bureaucrat, and neither does Murray. Are you strong enough to be a porter, she asks? Hell yeah, I say, warming up to the possibilities. I've got some pretty sophisticated myofiber logments. I can change a tire on my car without a jack. I don't mention that the car's a Renault Quattrelle or that I can only do that on the back end, but let's see you lift the back end of a car with one hand. What are me and Murray going to have to carry? Foreign Affairs figures they help you to get the contract done under the cover of you carrying in something big while they sort out her visa. This makes everyone happy. Apparently the ambassador knows about the contract and hates his mother. There's a surprise. Fax me the contract in case it's some kind of trick on the part of the bonobos. Foreign Affairs doesn't want anything to go wrong, Reggie. Nothing will go wrong, will it? No, of course not. I'll fax you the contract right away. Nothing will go wrong. I glare at Murray meaningfully. Good. I hang up. My big, dumb sidekick waits for me to say something. Murray, luck is breaking our way. You better not screw this up for us. Gibbon number one at the protocol office, Howard, is one of the elite white-handed gibbons. He's stuffy. He doesn't look at me twice before taking his perfectly preened, dark, and fluffy fur out to the ministry car that will take him to the bonobo residence. Gibbon number two, Remy, is friendlier. His cream-colored fur is matted at the waist where a leather belt holds two blackberries, a cell phone, and a pack of Marlboros. His black face, surrounded by a halo of white fur, regards me with some boredom. You guys gonna be able to lift those boxes? He asks. Murray keeps his eyes down. I told him again, just before getting here, that he'd better not fuck this up. The boxes of pristine white cardboard are heavy and big, but we've both got augmented strength. The boxes will make beautiful camouflage. No problem. Remy guides us to a second ministry car. They get their own, with the boxes. "So you really got hired to euthanize the ambassador's mother, eh?" Remy asks me. "I'm the best. When you want to be off by an international assassin, I'm your guy." "I'll keep you in mind," he says. "My mother-in-law is getting up there, and soon she'll have to come live with us." "See if she's open to the idea," I say brightly. "Let me know if a talk with one of our sales reps would help." "Thanks, I will." He takes my card and heads to his own vehicle to join Howard. "See," I say to Murray in the back of the ministry car they've assigned us. It's got a Gibbon driver up front. "That's what gets us business. Personal contact. People are looking for warmth. When are you going to show some warmth and bring us some business?" Murray looks sheepish, pouting his lower lip as the car convoy pulls into the traffic. I sit back, trying to think of all the angles. I've got to get this one right. Potential clients are going to be watching. I try to think of every way that Murray can screw this up. There are way too many ways, so I try and group them. I give him some last-minute instructions as we drive through the gate of the Bonobo official residence. The protocol office has duded us out in yellow coveralls, like we're debt-bonded criminals or something. The box I'm carrying has a small flap on one corner, where I can access some heavy statues with a lot of curves and confusing lines that mask the stashed carbon plastic pistol with a full magazine of ceramic rounds. I get to pull it out when I can find a clear shot. I'm almost giggling inside, thinking of how many rounds I put in the old hag's chest and how many I put in her head. She should never have bet against Reggie. We pull the boxes out of the trunk and bring them to an X-ray scanner. Remy's a real expert at distracting them and guides the Bonobo diplomatic security into each of the boxes, pointing at all the little moving parts on the sculptures. They are appropriately baffled, and they don't find the plastic pistol. We carry the boxes behind Howard and Remy. We go through a big receiving hall with marbled floors and a lot of tropical plants, out to a garden in the back of the house. An older Bonobo male, lightly furred in black over gray skin, stands by a fountain. A Bonobo waiter in an apron and white shirt stands near him with glasses of scotch and wine on a tray. Alexandra the Bonobo sits in her wheelchair under a tree in front of her bored bodyguard. I'm not sure what I expected. I mean, based on half the stories you hear about Bonobos, I'm expecting the ambassador to be rubbing genitals with the waiter. But maybe those are just stories. You've heard the old joke? What's the difference between Bonobo porn and real life? Nothing? It's an oldie but a goodie. Unsurprisingly, however, the ambassador's mother is complaining loudly about something. Murray is beside me, blocking the hag's view of me, and most of the attention is on Howard anyway, who is shaking hands and exchanging a lot of fancy, meaningless words with the ambassador. I've got my shot. Goodbye, you racist old bitch. I slip my hand through the flap and reach for the pistol in the innards of the statue. It's not there. I feel frantically in the box and around the statue. I've got a couple of seconds before I'll start looking stupid, holding a box in front of my face. Once I put it down with no gun, the cranky bitch is going to see me. Then I'll be the laughing stock of the euthanasia profession before I'll have even killed anyone. The room goes silent. I sag and put down the box. Murray puts his down. And there's Remy, pointing the plastic gun at the ambassador, but staring down the Bonobo bodyguard. Ah, shit. In a second, I can see where this is all going. I'm not just going to lose my reputation and my business and get deported. I'm about to get killed. The Gibbons and the Bonobos hate each other's guts. The Gibbon Foreign Ministry got wind of my contract and saw their opportunity to kill the ambassador and blame the hit on a macaque migrant worker. In about 10 seconds, everybody in this room is going to be dead except Remy and Howard. The Bonobo investigators will find the gun in my hand. We're unarmed. I look at Murray for help. The dumb chimp's eyes are wide and he looks like he's going to need a diaper in a second. Good for nothing, son of a... I grab my sidekick and throw him at Remy with all my strength. They fall like coconuts in a hurricane. Howard jumps after them, after my damn gun. The Bonobo bodyguard whips out his pistol and pumps 18 rounds into the simian tangle on the floor. With the 2 rounds left in his chamber, he swings the barrel at me. I've already got my hands high in the air. I'm a non-combatant. I'm not with them, I say, slow and loud. I kill old people. I'm here to kill her. I point one finger at the ambassador's mother. I've got a contract. You saw her sign it. And you haven't been able to get close to me even once, you little macaque failure, she cackles, standing in her soggy, stained diaper. Her bodyguard flinches and then swivels his pistol back at the bullet-ridden bodies of Howard and Remy. Underneath them, Murray sits up, rubbing three vicious welts on his arm where bullets hit him.
Oh.
A motivational speaker he ain't. He's with me, I say. He's my employee. We're fully bonded. The doors to the garden burst open, and a bunch of armed bonobo security guys rush in. Everybody's loud. It takes a while for the bonobos to take away the two gibbon corpses and the gun. A few extra security guys stick close to the ambassador. Junior, get this little trash out of here, Alexander the bonobo yells. He's failed again, this time miserably. International assassin, my ass. Pathetic, she says. Get me out of here. The ambassador has an irritated look on his face as the bodyguard wheels her out. Alexandra turns her nose from me disdainfully. As she passes, I snake my hands out, one on her chin and the other on the crown of her head. I twist. The snap silences the garden. Guns whip out again, but I've already got my hands up. Murray ducks to the floor and covers his head. I had a contract. She hired me to kill her. I'm a euthanasist. I'm not even sure that that's a word, but everybody looks at the ambassador. He and the bodyguard nod. I promised her an exciting and surprising death, I say, lowering my arm slowly. Mission accomplished. She never saw it coming. It takes a week to sort everything out. The Gibbons don't have their public excuse for a war they want, unless the bonobos tell everyone what happened, which they don't. For saving the ambassador, Murray gets a reward. I don't know what the hell fight the ambassador was watching. At least Murray shares it with me, 70-30. He uses his 30% to have his wife and kids smuggled in from the chimpanzee townships, and I get them some passable documents. Well, yeah, passable. And I get my fee from finally helping the old bag shuffle off the mortal coil. I'm sure she would have said I didn't do my job the way she wanted it in the contract, but the ambassador must have liked the service. He let slip that he's flying in his mother-in-law from the bonobo capital for a talk.
Thanks for listening to Asimov's Spotlight, a feature of Asimov's Science Fiction Magazine. If you liked what you've heard, consider subscribing to Asimov's. We're available in print and digital. And please stop by again next month to hear another exciting story chosen from our pages.